This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interests of its audiences in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Hello, and welcome to the African American Experience, a program celebrating the artistic, cultural, and historic contributions of African Americans. This program has been created and produced by Audio Journal's Roy Allen Project to carry on the work and vision of its namesake. Roy Allen was an extraordinary human being who deeply touched the lives of his family, his friends, and his colleagues. He was a trailblazer for African Americans in the fields of theater, radio, and television. In carrying on Roy's vision to inspire the African American community to a sense of pride and power in its achievements and to share those achievements with all the community, we present the African American Experience with your host, Tina E. Gaffney. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another scintillating episode of the African American Experience. I use that word scintillating because the individual featured in this segment is exactly that. Some of you may remember her, some of you may not, but as they say, if you don't know, well, now you'll know. The one, the only, Pam Grier. Pamela Suzette Grier was born May the 26th, 1949, is an African-American actress, singer, and martial artist. She achieved fame for her starring roles in a string of 1970s action, blaxploitation, and women in prison films for American International Pictures and New World Pictures. Her accolades include nominations for an Emmy Award, a Golden Globe Award, a Screen Actors Guild Award, a Satellite Award, and a Saturn Award. Ms. Grier was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Her alma mater was Metropolitan State College. She's an actress, a singer, and a martial artist. Her career has spanned from 1970 to the present day. Grier came to prominence with her titular roles in the films Coffee in 1973 and Foxy Brown in 1974. Her other major films during this period included The Big Doll House in 1971, Women in Cages, 1971, The Big Bird Cage, 1972, Black Mama, White Mama, 1973, Scream, Blackula, Scream, 1973, The Arena, 1974, Sheba Baby, 1975, Bucktown, 1975, and Friday Foster, 1975. She also portrayed alongside Richard Pryor as his character Wendell Scott's wife in the film Grease Lightning, 1977. She portrayed the title character in Tarantino's crime film Jackie Brown in 1997, nearly three decades after her first starring role. Grier also appeared in Escape from L.A. in 1996, Mars Attacks, 1996, Jawbreaker, 1999, Holy Smoke, 1999, Snow Day, 2000, Bones, 2001, Just Right, 2010, Larry Crown, 2011, and Palms, 2019. On television, Greer portrayed Eleanor Winthrop in the Showtime comedy-drama series Lynx from 1998 through 2000, Kate Kit Porter on the Showtime drama series The L Word from 2004 through 2009, and Constance Terry in the ABC sitcom Bless This Mess from 2019 to 2020. She received praise for her work in the animated series Happily Ever After, Fairy Tales for Every Child, 1999. In 2016, IndieWire named Greer one of the best actors never to have received an Academy Award nomination. Greer was born on May the 26th, 1949, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the daughter of Gwendolyn Sylvia Davis, a homemaker and nurse, and Clarence Ransom Greer, Jr., who worked as a mechanic and technical sergeant in the United States Air Force. She has one sister and one brother. Greer said she is of African American, Hispanic, Chinese, Filipino, and Cheyenne heritage. She was raised Catholic and later baptized as a Methodist. Because of her father's military career, the family moved frequently during Greer's childhood. In 1956, they moved to Swindon, England, where her father worked on an Air Force base. By Greer's account, he was one of the only African-American men working there, and they were one of the only African-American families in the entire town. Though she recalled that they faced no racism or segregation compared to that in the United States. Quote, "They didn't care that I was African American since they hadn't been raised to hate African Americans. Instead, they've been raised to hate Germans. In the U.S., especially in the South, we were never able to get buses to stop for us. We couldn't eat in certain restaurants, couldn't use certain bathrooms. Up until 1969, there were department stores in which my father and I weren't even allowed to try on clothing." End quote. The family returned to the United States in 1958, when Greer's father was transferred to California's Travis Air Force Base, eventually settling in Denver, Colorado, near the Lowry Air Force Base. Greer spent part of her upbringing making sure that she got to work on her grandparents' sugar beet farm, where she got to work on her grandparents' farm for them in rural Wyoming, where their ancestors had homesteaded after fleeing west via the Underground Railroad to escape slavery. Greer attended East High School in Denver and appeared in a number of stage productions, as well as participating in beauty contests, although now they're actually called scholarship programs, to raise money for college tuition at Metropolitan State College. Greer moved to Los Angeles in 1967, where she was initially hired to work the switchboard at American International Pictures, or AIP. She is believed to have been discovered by the director, Jack Hill, and was cast in Roger Corman women in prison films such as The Big Doll House in 1971, Women in Cages in 1971, and The Big Bird Cage in 1972. While under contract at AIP, she became a staple of Early's 1970 blaxploitation films, playing bold, assertive women, beginning with Hill's Coffee in 1973, in which she portrayed a nurse who seeks revenge on drug dealers. Her character was advertised in the trailer as the baddest one-chick hit squad that ever hit town. The film, which was filled with sexual and violent elements typical of the genre, was a box office hit. Greer is considered to be the first African-American woman to headline an action film, as protagonists of previous blaxploitation films were men. In his review of Coffee, critic Roger Ebert praised the film for its believable female lead. He noted that Greer was an actress of beautiful face and astonishing form, and that she possessed a kind of physical life missing from many other attractive actresses. Greer portrayed similar characters in the AIP films Foxy Brown in 1974, Sheba Baby, and Friday Foster, both in 1975. With the demise of blaxploitation later in the 1970s, Greer appeared in smaller roles for many years. She acquired progressively larger character roles in the 1980s, including a druggy prostitute in Fort Apache, the Bronx, in 1981, and a witch in Something Wicked This Way Comes, in 1983. In 1985, Greer made her theatrical debut in Sam Shepard's Fool for Love at the Los Angeles Theater Center. Greer returned to film as Steven Seagal's detective partner in Above the Law in 1988. She had a recurring role in Miami Vice from 1985 to 1989 and made guest appearances on Martin, Night Court, and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. She had a recurring role in the TV series Crime Story between 1986 and 1988. Her role in Rocket Gibraltar, 1988, was cut due, according to Greer, to fears by the film's director, Daniel Petrie, of repercussions from interracial love scenes. She appeared on Sinbad, Preston Chronicles, The Cosby Show, The Wayans Brothers, and Mad TV. In 1994, Greer appeared in Snoop Dogg's video for Doggy Dog World. In the late 1990s, Greer was a cast member of the Showtime series Winx. She appeared in 1996 in John Carpenter's Escape from L.A. and 1997 was a title role in Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown. Films have partly paid homage to her 1970s blaxploitation films. She was nominated for numerous awards for her work in a Tarantino film. Greer appeared on Showtime's The L Word, in which she portrayed Kit Porter. The series ran for 6 seasons and ended in March 2009. Greer occasionally guest stars in such television series as Law and Order Special Victims Unit, where she is a recurring character. In 2010, Greer began appearing in a recurring role on the hit science fiction series Smallville as the villain Amanda Walker, known also as the White Queen, head agent of Checkmate, a covert operations agency. In addition to portraying villain Amanda Waller, she appeared as a friend and colleague to Julia Roberts College professor in 2011's Larry Crown. In 2010, Greer wrote her memoir, Foxy, My Life in 3 Acts, with Andrea Kagan. Greer received an honorary doctorate of humane letters from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore in 2011. That same year, she received an honorary doctorate of science from Langston University. Essence magazine wrote in 2012, "So revolutionary were the characters Greer portrayed that women reportedly would stand on chairs and cheer." Greer founded the Pam Greer Community Garden and Education Center with the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum. The purpose is to teach people about organic gardening, health, and nutrition, among other things. The museum named its first garden in honor of Greer in 2011. In January of 2018, Greer said that a biopic based on her memoir is in the works, entitled Pam. In April of 2022, Turner Classic Movies, or TCM, announced the 4th season of their podcast, The Plot Thickens, would focus on Greer's life and career. Pam Greer met basketball player Ferdinand Lewis, Lou Alcindor, in 1969. Early in their relationship, he converted to Islam and changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Abdul-Jabbar proposed to Greer on the condition that she immediately convert as well. Greer refused, and he married a different woman that day. Greer met the comedian Freddie Prinz while promoting her film Coffee in 1973. They began a relationship and considered marriage. Prinz wanted her to have his baby, but she was reluctant due to his history of depression and drug addiction. They remained in touch after their breakup. She was one of the last people Prinz spoke to before he passed in 1977. Greer met the comedian Richard Pryor through her relationship with Prinz. They began dating after they were both cast in 1977's Greased Lightning. She helped Pryor learn to read and tried to extricate him from drug abuse. After 6 months of sobriety, he relapsed. In her memoir, Greer described how her sexual relationship with Pryor caused cocaine to enter her system. Greer confronted Pryor about protecting her health, but he refused to use a condom. Pryor married Deborah McGuire while dating Greer in 1977. Greer was formerly romantically linked to Jimmy Big Wheel Wheeler, a famous boxing promoter, and Soul Train host Don Cornelius. In 1998, Greer was engaged to RCA Records executive Kevin Evans, but the engagement ended in 1999. Greer was diagnosed with stage 4 cervical cancer in 1988 and was told she had 18 months to live. Through vigorous treatment, she recovered and has since been in remission. Greer lives on a ranch in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Although she is close with actor and Protestant minister Rosie Greer, she denies the rumors that they are related. During a 2026 appearance on The View, Greer claimed to have seen lynched bodies during her childhood in Columbus, Ohio. These comments stirred controversy as America's Black Holocaust Museum reports that the final recorded lynchings in Ohio took place in 1911, decades before Greer's birth. For her, the cultural shaping effect of cultural contributions made through her career, Greer was recognized with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2024 Toronto African American Film Festival. For Valentine's Day 2024, Tarantino paid homage to Greer with the opening of a Los Feliz coffee shop carrying the namesake of the 1973 American culture-shaping character she famously portrayed in Coffee. Now, this is not a whole list, but a list of the films that she's been in since 1970. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, she was a party goer. The Big Doll House, she portrayed Greer, spelled G-R-E-A-R. Women in Cages, she portrayed a character named Alabama. The Twilight People, she portrayed the character of Aisha. Cool Breeze, she portrayed the role of Mona. The Big Bird Cage, she portrayed the character of Blossom. Hitman, she portrayed the character of Gozelda. Black Mama, White Mama, she portrayed the character of Lee Daniels, not to be confused with the director, Lee Daniels, of film. In 1973, she portrayed Coffee. In the film Coffee, she portrayed the nurse flower child, Coffee Coffin, and Scream, Blackula, Scream, she portrayed Lisa Fortier. In 1974, she was in Foxy Brown as Foxy Brown and in The Arena as Mamawi. In 75, she was in Sheba Baby as Sheba Shane, Bucktown as Aretha, and Friday Foster as Friday Foster. In 1976, she was in the film Drum, and she portrayed the role of Regine. In 1977, she was in Twilight of Love, where she portrayed Sandra, and Greased Lightning, where she portrayed the role of Mary Jones. In 1981, she was in Fort Apache, the Bronx, where she portrayed Charlotte. In 1983, she was in the film Tough Enough, where she portrayed Myra, and Something Wicked This Way Comes, she was the Dust Witch. In 1985, she was in Stand Alone, and she portrayed the role of Catherine Bolan. In 1986, she was in The Vindicator, she portrayed the role of Hunter, and On the Edge, she portrayed the role of Cora. In 1987, she was in the film The All Writer, and she portrayed Sergeant McLeish. In 1988, she was in the film Above the Law, and she portrayed Detective Dolores Jax Jackson. In 1980, she was in the film The Package, and she portrayed Ruth Butler. In 1990, she was in the film Class of 1999. She portrayed the role of Miss Connors. In 1991, she was in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. She portrayed the role of Miss Wardrow. In 1993, she was in the film Posse. She portrayed the role of Phoebe. In 1996, she was in the film Original Gangsters. She portrayed the role of Lori Thompson. In 1996, she was also in the film Escape from L.A. She portrayed the role of Jack Carjack Malone, Hershey Las Palmas. She was also in the film Mars Attacks as Louise Williams. In 1997, she was in the film Strip Search and portrayed the role of Jeanette. In 1997, she was also in Fakin' Defunct, and she portrayed the role of Annabelle Lee. And in 1997, she was in the film Jackie Brown, where she portrayed Jackie Brown. And in 1999, she was in the film Jawbreaker, where she portrayed Detective Vera Cruz. And she was, in 1999, in the film No Tomorrow, where she portrayed Diane. Into Deep, where she portrayed Detective Angela Wilson. In the film Holy Smoke, she portrayed the character Carol. And in Snow Day, she portrayed the character Tina. In 2000, she was in the film Fortress 2 Reentry, and she portrayed the role of Susan Mendenhall. And she was in the film Wilder, where she portrayed Detective Della Wilder. In 2001, she was in the film 3 AM, and she portrayed the character Georgie. And she was in the film Love the Hard Way, and she was the character Linda. In 2001, she was in the film Ghosts of Mars, where she portrayed Commander Helena Braddock, and she was in the film Bones, where she portrayed Pearl. Now, those are just some of the film roles she's done. In television, in 1979, she was in Roots and Next Generations as the role of Francie. In 1980, she was on The Love Boat. She portrayed the role of Cynthia Wilbur. In 1985, she was in the TV show Badger the Assassin, and she portrayed Alexandra Horn. In 1985 to 1990, she was on Miami Vice, and she portrayed Valerie Gordon. In 1986, she was on the television series Night Court, and she portrayed Binet Collins. In 1986 through 1988, she was on the TV show Crime Story and Suzanne Terry. In 1987, she was on The Cosby Show, and she portrayed Samantha. In 1988, she portrayed Frank's Place. She was on the TV show Frank's Place, and she portrayed the role of Nima Sharon. In 1989, she was on the television series Midnight Caller. She portrayed the role of Susan Province. In 1990, she portrayed on the show Knots Landing, Lieutenant Guthrie. In 1991, she was on the TV show Monsters, and she portrayed Matilde. In 1992, she was on the show Pacific Station and portrayed Grace Ballard, as well as A Mother's Right, The Elizabeth Morgan Story, and she portrayed the role of Linda Holman. On the TV show In Living Color, she portrayed herself. On the Sinbad Show, she portrayed Lynn Montgomery. On The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, she portrayed Janice Robinson, and all three of those shows were in 1994. In 1995, she portrayed on the television show The Marshall Vernetta Brown, and she was on the television series Martin, where she portrayed herself. And in 1996, she was on the television series Sparks. She portrayed the role of Miss Grayson. She was on The Wayans Brothers, and she portrayed the role of Erica. On Mad TV, she was portraying the role of the host. In 1998, she was on the television series Pinky and the Brain, and portrayed Julie Auburn. She was on the television series Family Blessings, and she portrayed the role of Mrs. Quincy. And from 1998 to 2000, she was on the television series Lynx and portrayed Eleanor Winthrop, The Wild Thornberries, and portrayed Mother Springbok, Happily Ever After, Fairy Tales for Every Child, and she was in The Empress's Nightingale. In 1999, she was on Hayley Wagner's Star. She portrayed Sam. She was in the TV show For Your Love, and she portrayed the role of Brenda. And in 2001, she was on Strange Frequency, and it doesn't say what role she portrayed. She was in a show called The Feast of All Saints, and she portrayed Suzette Lemontant. In 2002, she was in Night Visions, where she portrayed the role of Dr. Lewis. In 2002, she was in the TV show Justice League, and she portrayed Mariah. And from 2002 to 2003, she was on Law and Order Special Victims Unit, the TV show, and she portrayed the Assistant U.S. Attorney, Claudia Williams. In 2003, she was in the TV show First to Die, where she portrayed the role of Clara Washburn. In 2004 to 2009, she was on the television program The L Word, and she portrayed the role of Kit Porter. And that is just a small sampling of things she's done. She's also done video games, Grand Theft Auto V in 2013, and in 2017, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. In both of those, she portrayed herself. And she was in Doggy Dog World, a music video by Snoop Dogg, and she portrayed Foxy Brown. So there's that. In addition to which, her discography is pretty amazing. Longtime Woman, 1971, from the film The Big Dollhouse. Communication by Bobby Womack, 1971. She did the backing vocals. Understanding by Bobby Womack. She also did the backing vocals. So like I said, these are the things that can happen when you believe in your dream and you don't give up and you keep working and working and working to see it reach fruition, because for all you know, it could be right around the corner once you decide to, you know, maybe relook at it and maybe, you know, not give it as much energy as you have been giving it. But the funny thing is, if you keep giving it energy and you keep realizing how much you've accomplished, you will be rather surprised at what you can achieve. And a person who knows all about achievement is the next person I'll be talking about, Marva Collins. Marva Dolores Collins, Ninite, was born on August the 31st, 1936. She passed on June the 24th, 2015. She was an African-American educator. Collins is best known for creating the West Side Preparatory School, a widely acclaimed private elementary school in the impoverished Garfield Park neighborhood of Chicago, Illinois, which opened in 1975. Marva Collins was born on August the 31st, 1936, in Monroeville, Alabama. She passed on June the 24th, 2015, 78 years young, at Beaufort County, South Carolina. Other names she's gone by have been Marva King. She received her education at Clark Atlanta University. Her occupation is an editor and educator. Her career spanned from 1957 through 2008. She was known for creating West Side Preparatory School in Chicago's Garfield Park neighborhood in 1975. She married Clarence Collins in 1960. He passed in 1995, and they had three children. Collins was born in Monroeville, Alabama, to Father Henry Knight, a businessman who owned a funeral home and worked with cattle, and to her mother, Bessie Knight, Nee Nettles. She grew up in Atmore, Alabama, a small town near Mobile, Alabama, during the time of segregation in the American South. When she was young, Collins went to a strict elementary school in a one-room schoolhouse in Atmore, an experience which influenced her later in life. She graduated from Clark College, now known as Clark Atlanta University, in Atlanta, Georgia. Collins taught school for 2 years in Alabama, and while she was teaching, she learned many a thing, which is really good, because how can you be an educator and not learn? While she was teaching as a full-time substitute in inner-city Chicago's public school system, she ended up doing that for 14 years. Dismayed at the low levels of learning that she felt some students were experiencing in particular areas, Collins took $5,000, $25,910 in 2021 dollars, is the value that that would have had then, from her own teacher's retirement fund and started a private school on the top floors of the brownstone in the West Garfield Park neighborhood where she lived in 1975. The school she started was called West Side Preparatory School. West Side Prep became an educational and commercial success. Collins created her low-cost private school specifically for the purpose of teaching low-income African-American children, whom Collins felt the Chicago public school system had mislabeled as being learning disabled. Collins said she had the data to prove that her students were teachable and were able to overcome obstacles of learning via her teaching methods, which she said eliminated behavioral issues and allowed students to flourish. The one-room schoolhouse of her education influenced her methods. At home, her father gave her assignments she believed built her confidence and gave her a sense of responsibility. She felt time spent with students was more valuable than distance creating audio-visual information. Collins and her daughter ran the school for more than 30 years until it closed in 2008 due to lack of sufficient enrollment and funding. Collins became well known due to the 1981 TV movie based on her life's work, entitled The Marva Collins Story, starring Cicely Tyson and Morgan Freeman. She also appeared on a featured news article on CBS's 60 Minutes. Cicely Tyson, who portrayed Collins in the TV movie, said she spent time with Collins to research the role. The 60 Minutes feature was inspired by a 1970s article written by Chicago Sun-Times reporter Zay N. Smith about Collins and West Side Prep. In 1982, Kevin Ross, a 23-year-old Creighton University basketball player, got to his senior year of college without being able to read. With the assistance of a Creighton booster, Ross enrolled in seventh grade at West Side Prep. With private tutoring by Collins, Ross learned how to read and graduated in May of 1983. Ross had difficulties continuing his education, but when he had serious troubles, Collins was instrumental in helping him. Due to the success of her teaching methods, it was reported that at that time, President Ronald Reagan wanted to nominate Collins to the position of United States Secretary of Education, but Collins took herself out of the running for the position. In 1983, Reagan cited Collins during an unveiling of a national program to combat adult illiteracy. She was also asked by President George Bush to become Secretary of Education, but she declined in favor of teaching one student at a time. In 1994, Prince featured Collins in his music video, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. He also donated $500,000 to the West Side Preparatory School Teacher Training Institute, which was created to teach Collins's educational methodology. In 1996, Collins was hired to supervise three Chicago public schools that had been placed on probation. In 2004, Collins received a National Humanities Medal, among many awards for her teaching and efforts at school reform. During the 2006-2007 school year, Collins School charged $5,500 for tuition, and parents said the school did a much better job than the Chicago public school system, which budgeted $11,330 per student. The authorities complained that this was not enough. Collins was known for applying classical education, in particular the Socratic method, modified for use in primary schools, successfully with impoverished students. Collins criticized the teaching of the students, not the students themselves. She wrote a number of manuals, books, and motivational tracts describing her history and methods. In 1982, in subsequent articles, Collins had been criticized by George N. Schmidt from Substance News, who claims that the Collins work was fraudulent. Collins denied any fraud. At the time, Collins had both supporters and detractors. Collins was married to Clarence Collins from September of 1960 until his death in 1995. Together, they had three children. Collins passed on June 24, 2015, in Beaufort County, South Carolina, aged 78, while in hospice care. Some of the works that Marva Collins worked on were, with others, A Conversation with Marva Collins, A Different School from the Human Condition. She worked on that with Burt Kruger-Smith and Charlene Warren. Marva Collins and Sibia Tamarkin, Marva Collins Way. Marva Collins, Ordinary Children, Extraordinary Teachers. Marva Collins Values, Lighting the Candle of Excellence, A Practical Guide for the Family. There's also a video about Marva Collins from 60 Minutes, Carousel Films, New York, Dave Bell Associates, Success, The Marva Collins Approach, Marva Collins, Too Good to Be True, 60 Minutes, Anthony Robbins, Marva Collins, and Peter Lynch, Anthony Robbins, Power Talk, The Power of Life Metaphors, Conrad Holzgang, Clifford Campion, Peter Levin, Cicely Tyson, and Morgan Freeman, The Marva Collins Story, Burbank, California. Ms. Collins received the Jefferson Awards for Public Service in 1981, the award for greatest public service benefiting the disadvantaged. In 1981, Ms. Collins received the George Collins Award of the Congressional Black Caucus. In 2004, Ms. Collins received the National Endowment for the Humanities, National Humanities Medalist. In addition to which, she received the Alpha Kappa Alpha Honorary Member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. My goodness gracious. This is what I mean. You know, the more energy you put into what you do in all different sorts of levels, you would be surprised. You would really be surprised at what you can have happen based on the effort you put in it. I've been telling people for years, you get back what you give out. Now, I find it interesting that there's a resource for Catholic education that has some excerpts from her Ordinary Children, Extraordinary Teachers, and Marva Collins Way. Marva Collins began her teaching career in Monroe County Training School, Alabama, as a 16-year-old in 1957. 2 years after that, she moved to Garfield Park, a suburb on the west side of Chicago. Teaching took on a new dimension when she began teaching children from the inner city. Although she knew little about educational theory to begin with, the help of experienced colleagues, natural talent, and years of her own teaching experience made Marva an excellent teacher. Becoming disillusioned by the failure of the public school system and the lack of real educating being done, she left her teaching position and decided to start her own school, Westside Prep, which opened its doors in September of 1975 with 4 students. By 1980, enrollment had increased to 200 students with a waiting list of 500 more. Working with students having the worst of backgrounds, those who were working far below grade level, and even those who had been labeled as unteachable, Marva was able to overcome the obstacles. News of third grade students reading at a ninth grade level, 4-year-olds learning to read in only a few months, outstanding test scores, disappearance of behavioral problems, second graders studying Shakespeare, and other incredible reports astounded the public. What was the secret of her success with these inner city children? Or is this miracle, as many called it? The answers lay in her love for each one of her students, a positive approach to education, complete dedication to her teaching role, and a refusal to give up, and a great deal of common sense, avoiding mediocrity as a teacher. One of her quotes was, "Make the poor student good and the good student superior." The good ones, teachers, are constantly trying to find answers. The poor ones are constantly making excuses. Some teachers think that just what is given to them in the classroom is all there is to be used. These are very poor teachers. You have to go beyond. To just read what is given to me in a classroom and not explore other means and not explore other connecting topics still guarantees failure as a teacher. Learning is everywhere. I think that is the one thing that is missing in the minds of many teachers. Everything in life has knowledge connected to it, and students are just waiting to learn things. We can all pay teachers to teach, but how much do you really pay a teacher to care? A dedicated staff will take personally the failure of just one child. A school will only work because of motivated leadership and dedication from the teachers. Students may know nothing. They may be complete illiterates, but they know when we know, and they respect when we know. A good teacher must be more than a 2x4 teacher bound by the 4 walls of a classroom and the 2 covers of a book. I have a passion for being the very best teacher that I can be. I hear teachers and educators complaining about how far a child is behind, what a child doesn't know. That's what we're there for. It's not a problem. You can see it as a problem, or you can see it as a challenge. You innately have all the right stuff that it takes to make a good teacher. If you eradicate yourself of the idea that these children cannot learn, you can only do one thing at a time. You can't teach a whole year in one day. Prepare to be the very best teacher you can be that one day in that classroom. Then come home day one and prepare to be the very best teacher you can be on day 2. Have a positive attitude towards teaching. Think of the power that you possess to manage a whole group of children. You can bend them like a piece of putty. You can make them what you want. Teach every day. Do whatever profession you're in. Do it every day, every moment, as if the whole world were watching. I teach as if Jesus Christ himself were in that classroom. And when you do that, you're bound to see great things happening. Each of us can make a difference. Each of us has what it takes to make a difference, and that's a passion for being excellent in what we do. All of us, what are we? All of us are what we are, and are what we are because of the excellence of somebody before us. Miss Collins continues, the miracle of teaching is dedication, common sense, determination, and a love for our students. Most human beings are as good as they are because some unknown teacher cared enough to continue polishing until a shiny luster came shining through, because some teacher cared enough to remove the previous tags and labels of failure from their psyches. Miss Collins' thoughts on fostering a positive attitude toward learning. The teacher can never write anything negative about a child. Everything is positive. Find something positive to say about a child every morning. When our children walk in the door, I say, welcome to success. Say goodbye to failure, because you're not going to fail. I'm not going to let you fail. You have created an attitude that puts joy back into learning, that creates satisfaction at doing something correctly. We always find something positive to say about their papers. Very good, but let's proofread this. No teacher ever uses the words, that's wrong. We always find something positive to say about a child. Create an ambiance of positiveness in the classroom where the child learns that it takes more courage to be wrong than to play it safe without ever responding to questions. Children respond to love and positive feedback rather than negative programming. Write encouraging notes to children, not just when they are in trouble. Never let students say, I can't. Say to them, we remove the T from the can't, and we have can. When a child gives an incorrect answer, say, very good, trying, but not quite. Praise is essential in developing the right attitude toward learning and toward school. We all know this in theory. In practice, we often forget the importance of praise in dealing with children. Discipline. I usually detect a child who wants to act out. I stand right behind that child and talk directly to him because the children who are behaving do not need my attention. These children usually see themselves as failures. It is good to give them the taste of success. In our school, the children do not give a problem child an audience. Therefore, there is no need for him to act out, he or she to act out. There is no laughing if he gets smart alecky or if he or she comes out with something to say. Turn disciplinary situations into positive lessons. React positively to whatever children do. I think we tend to make too much out of nothing. If a child is drawing in class, compliment him or her on their beautiful picture and have them write about it. If a child is chewing gum in class, have them write a composition on the history of gum, graded as a regular assignment. Have a child write a composition or deliver a speech entitled, Why Am I Too Bright to Waste Time in School? If a child shoots a rubber band, take the rubber band away. Don't turn it into a big deal. Usually, when children act out or when children refuse to learn, it is a signal that something is wrong, just as an illness or pain is a signal that something is physically wrong with us. I consider myself parent and teacher. It is my responsibility to let my lessons go for a few minutes to find out what may be bothering this child. I try to empathize with whatever is bothering him or her. We do not have the discipline problems that most schools have. A child will say to another one, "You've taken away my right to learn." Or if a child insists on acting up, we will say, "Why aren't you going to do that?" Then, retort to us will be, "Because I'm too bright to waste my time." Anybody can send a child to the office. That's a very poor teacher. The superior teacher always has the idea that just one more time will do it. Children respect the fact that you care. They rebel against order, but they respect nothing else. They respect the fact that you maintain your own classroom. Ignoring a negative behavior is saying negative behavior is right. Never place problem students in the corners or in the back of the classroom. Keep them near you. Remember, we need to reach the troubled child quickly. Avoid telling parents negative things about their children. You and the children attempt to solve the problems that arise in your classroom. You earn the respect and trust of your students, and you become a more effective teacher. Do not send students to the office. Remember, you, the teacher, must be able to handle your own family and your own household. Your household, in this case, being your classroom. Always make friends with each student before there is a discipline problem. Reduce ridicule and laughter in the classroom by telling the student who speaks out that he or she is very courageous and it took courage to be wrong, but they who stood silent or laughed took the easy path, and the child who speaks out is to be praised, not mocked. Create a simple spirit of group effort in the classroom. When Ms. Collins talks about the teacher's example, caring for every child, the teacher sets the ambiance in any classroom. The teacher has total control over the learning environment, and children respond exactly to the atmosphere a teacher creates. Teachers have been known to ridicule children or to laugh if a child cannot get the answer, even subtly. Nothing could be worse, being subtle or not, for a child in our school. The teachers and the rest of the children pull for a child to get it right. A classroom is like a total family, and it starts with the teacher setting the climate for support and care. When the other children see me accepting the child, they learn to accept that child too. As a teacher, you have to be accepting to everyone. Some of my most important work with children takes place at lunchtime. I have always insisted on eating lunch with my children instead of being separated off with the other teachers. I try to rotate, sitting next to a different child every day. You say by your actions that you are accepting that child, and you expect the rest of the children to accept him or her too. You are providing a model of behavior for all classrooms to follow. Get to know all of your students. Fraternize with the children. You establish rapport with the children by letting them know that you truly care about them. Same, same, same. No matter where I've taught, some students are not easy to like. But never pick on a student. If you find a student with undesirable behavior, go out of your way to like the student, and you will find out that one day you will like the student too. Our approach pushes students to excel And students like to be pushed. They want to do well. They want to succeed. And once they have a taste of that, they will never again settle for mediocrity. Be consistent in your expectations. If we allow children to use incomplete sentences in our classes, and then we write on their papers incomplete sentences, we allow them to speak in incomplete sentences, so they don't know what writing complete sentences is all about. When you aim low, there's really no place to go. We are in a just good enough attitude generation. We have to get back to that precision, that doing it right again. We let them know whatever they do must be the very, very best they can do. The problem with our schools is that our expectations are too low. Excellence is not an act, but a habit. The more you do something, the better you will become. We emphasize a total learning experience. Not only must students be able to pass tests, perform academically, and work through social situations, but they must also have a sense of humanity and compassion. I'll often say to my students that we can be ever so clever, but we also have to learn first how to be human. That's why I emphasize philosophy as found in some of the world's classic literary works. It's like I always say, explore, connect, create, and inspire. You have been listening to The African American Experience, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. I'm Tina E. Gaffney. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. When a pair of Western grebes decides it's time to mate, it's as if they know they have an audience for the performance they're about to give. On the still waters of an alkaline lake, they call loudly and approach one another. Each bird curves, then straightens its long neck gracefully. They then face each other, necks on the water's surface, their bills flipping up drops of water. If attraction prevails, they rush together and off they go across the water, running on the surface side by side. Standing straight up with necks held high and feet churning like propellers, they no longer look much like grebes, more like participants in Tchaikovsky's ballet Swan Lake. After their lengthy pas de deux, with wings extended like parallel sails, they plunge below the surface. What follows is the weed ceremony, each bird diving to pick up a beakful of soft vegetation. The grebes then stand up in the water, face one another, press tightly together, then drop the plants and preen. The whole courtship sequence may begin again at any time, building in intensity as spring progresses and the pair makes ready to start a new generation. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hi. The Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.